Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. We're online at commonwealthclub.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and check out our YouTube channel. I'm Melissa Kane, your moderator for today's program. Will Durst has been hailed by the New York Times as quite possibly the best political satirist in the country today.
Wow. Not a recent quote.
Sweeping both sides of the aisle with a mix of incredulity and common sense, Will Durst transcends party lines, having performed at events honoring former presidents Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush. He is as current as today's headlines, outraged and outrageous. Durst is a five-time Emmy nominee. He has been fired by PBS three times. He has told jokes in 14 countries. He has racked up 7 nominations for Stand-Up of the Year and has been on television more than 800 times, including Letterman, NBC, CNN, Fox News, ABC, the BBC, CIA, FBI, and more. His Broadway one-man show, The All-American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing, and a book of the same name, received rave reviews from both the New York Times and the New York Post. He continues to be a leading voice in American political satire. His latest one-man show, Elect to Laugh, 2016, is in theaters around the Bay Area, including every Tuesday at the Marsh in San Francisco. You should definitely check it out. Everyone, please welcome to the Commonwealth Club, Will Durst.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you, Miss Melissa. I'm lucky. Every 4 years, every political comic says, oh, you know, every election cycle is good, but especially this time. But especially this time! And I have a career every 4 years for a month. And this is that month. So I got now, between now and November 8th, and I've written all this material, and on November 9th, it's going to evaporate. People will be so sick and tired of politics. It'll be la, 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 la. So I'll have to pivot, you know, one of the buzzwords right now. And I have no idea what I'm going to do. But right now, I'm just running as fast as I can to keep up. Because every day there's something with this guy. He is, it's good and it's bad. Everybody says, oh, he must be a gift from comedy heaven. Well, yeah, but no, I mean, how do you parody a parody? You know? Seriously, Donald Trump is the GOP nominee for president. That's the joke! Everything else is farce. It's like trying to staple smoke. So I'm just trying to keep up. And in my little show, what I do, because I did this in 2012, and I had the same experience. And in 2012, I started out on Super Tuesday doing the show, and it was about 70 minutes long. And by election night, it was every Tuesday at the Marsh, and election night we taped the show. It was 2 hours and 5 minutes long, and so it just keeps building. And I'm so lucky because I have people who are interested in politics coming to see the show rather than a comedy club audience. You know, the average age of a comedy club audience is 18 to 35, which was great when I was 18 to 35. But now that I'm approaching 40. I always hate that gets the biggest laugh of the show. But I'm too old for the comedy clubs, and I'm not famous enough. So, you know, I've clawed my way to the middle. And don't get me wrong, I like the middle. But at the comedy club, they want to see their own generation represented. So that's why it's great to do the little one-man shows, because people come on purpose to see politics. And I can talk about Mike Huckabee, and they know who I mean, you know? And it's not like I have to explain everything. So that's why I love it. And I'll be there, and I have no idea what's good, because we got the debates coming up.
I know you were at the conventions. We were both at both conventions. Yeah, yeah. Now, for the Republican convention especially, there was a lot of angst about sort of what was going to happen there, especially when we found out you could carry guns inside the exclusion zone. And it was one of these sort of like, make sure your will is in order before you actually go to this convention. What did you think of the protests and the protesters and how that went down?
I thought your husband put it best. I thought Christopher, you know, they were so polite. You know, they were Midwestern protesters. Yeah. But they had prepared. I mean, they had cops imported from all over the, and there were no Republicans there. You know, no, they all did. And Kasich, you know, the governor of Ohio, he didn't show up. He didn't make a big deal out of it, though. I mean, he just did. Jeff Flake, the Arizona Republican senator going up for reelection this year, he said he didn't go because he had to mow the lawn. Which is
that a euphemism for something?
No. Okay. He meant it literally. And it's Arizona. There is no lawn. But, I mean, so it was full of Trumpses. I mean, there was...
It did seem like it was the Trump convention as opposed to just a normal GOP convention.
For good and bad.
Now, who was your favorite speaker? Or who did you think was most entertaining?
I like Melania. I thought... poor baby.
She was so pretty.
Yeah. I mean, you will unfairly impugn, you know, the integrity of all fashion model writing, you know, after.
Did you say, look, inside the convention, it was interesting because no one seemed to care when the whole thing exploded on Twitter and was all over CNN the next day, and everybody in the convention center, if you went up to any of them, they were like, yeah, we don't. That's fine. I thought that was so, it was so, like, it was such a bubble that we were in.
You know what was weird was they thought it was a killer speech, and it was. When you were there and you watched her speech, she was incredible. And you know, and then, boom, the first night ended on such a, oh, wait a minute, she ripped it off, you know? You know, that is so Trumpian. And then all the momentum that they had built up was destroyed in that one day. And then they had Ben Carcinogenic, who called Hillary a disciple of Lucifer. Where do you go from there? There's not a lot of wiggle room after that. And then, of course, Ted Cruz, who refused to endorse him.
Was that a smart move or no? What do you think?
Yeah, I think he stole the page from Trump's playbook, you know, because people were talking about him. It didn't matter whether it was good or bad. I mean, they talked about Ted Cruz, and he put himself in position to be the front runner for 2020. And that race starts, by the way, on November 9th, 2016.
No, we had Chelsea speaking at the Democratic convention. We had Ivanka speaking at the Republican convention. What did you think of the daughter's speeches?
Well, it was weird because it was Trumpapalooza. The first day, the third wife spoke, and then the second day, the daughter of the second wife spoke, and then also the son of the first wife, and then the third day, the other son of the first wife, and then the fourth day, the daughter of the first wife introduced the fertile and fickle man himself, and they were joined by the son of the third wife. So it was just all Trump all the time. And they were all blonde. Did you notice that? They were all, even the ones who weren't blonde were blonde.
Hey, now.
I mean that in a good way. But it was white. If the RNC had an official meal, it would have been mashed potatoes on a paper plate with a side of leeks. I felt so bad for that one black delegate that they kept following around, and they tried to make him look like a crowd by using different camera angles and put him in different costumes, and they had hats and beards and stuff. Poor baby.
Well, speaking of sort of white, we've got two vice presidential candidates who are you know, the word nougat comes to mind. Yeah. Don't die. I know, comedian killer. Don't die. The word nougat comes to mind. This sort of like white substance. You're like, I'm not really sure. It's kind of taking up space. I don't really know what this is. It's not really adding much to what's happening. Like, since Kennedy picked Johnson, it seems like we've been trying to make Reagan these interesting Bush. Every inch. Well, true. I mean, there's always a pick, but we've been trying to make it interesting ever since. Should we just give up? Should we stop and thing, just say it's just going to be some boring dude?
Old Pence. I mean, he himself, we're not telling tales out of school. Pence himself said he's not the most exciting politician in the world, which is understatement. I mean, he makes vanilla look exotic, honest to God. But he's smart. He's a smart pick because, you know, he's the yin for Trump's yang. He's the conservative for the renegade. He's the soft green moss to cover the spiky shards. He's the 2% milk for the hydrochloric. Okay, you get the idea. But also, Kane is the same thing. I mean, Kane could accept a charisma implant from Al Gore. You know? So what about, I can't wait for the debate. They're going to have to spray the stage with Thompson's water seal.
I was going to say, I think that statement is probably not going to be uttered again. I can't wait for the VP debate. You're never going to hear that again, America.
I don't think the FDA is going to allow it to be broadcast on car radios.
Now you wrote that Hillary Clinton is a former first lady, former U.S. senator, former secretary of state, former female, former human. Does one need to be human to run for president? And what part of yourself do you have to kill?
Well, I mean, look at what she's gone through. I mean, she was first lady. This is what they said about her when she was first lady. She's a liar. She's a thief. She's a lesbian. She murdered Vince Foster with her bare hands and then ate him. That's when she was first lady. Can you imagine saying anything like that about Laura Bush or Nancy Reagan? Well, maybe Nancy Reagan. But, but I mean, they hate her so badly. I don't know why. I don't know if it's that one statement she made in 92 where I'm not going to stay home and bake cookies, you know, and that ticked everybody off. And, you know, they worried about their women folk at home putting on shoes and getting out of the kitchen or what. I don't know why, but it's biochemical with Republicans. It really is.
Well, at the convention, right, there were a couple of moments where, you know, the whole stadium.
Oh, yeah, lock her crazy. Up.
Yeah, lock her up or guilty during the Chris Christie speech. I mean, yeah, what did you make of, you know, thousands of people chanting that?
Well, it's, I mean, all you got to do is mention her name and the Republican Party, each individual, they start twitching like a hamster duct taped to a rotor tiller, honest to God. They make cartoon noises. They do. Hillary Clinton. I'm looking forward to this whole race just to see the smoke shooting out of Bill O'Reilly's ear every night. You know, the little trickle of blood coming out of his eye or his whatever.
And Trump has been really good about making up nicknames. He's very effective during the primaries with, you know, little Marco. Crooked Hillary, are you let down by that a little bit? Did you think he could do better?
No, actually, I think it's pretty apt.
Yeah, but I just felt like, you know, his other, you know, sort of tired jib was so...
Yeah, low energy jib.
Low energy jib was sort of spot on and original. And I just thought, hey, Crooked Hillary... Come on now.
I wonder why no one's come back on him. You know, Dopey Donald. You know? I was with Willie Brown. We did a...
Donald Trump.
Pardon? Donald Trump, yeah. Well, Willie Brown said that he should be Crazy Trump because he loves to brand everything, and so you got the Trump there. I don't know why nobody's been able to come back.
If only there was a comedian.
I'm going with Dopey Donald. I really am. Dopey Donald says he wants a purple heart, which means he either wants to be wounded or killed. I don't think he's alone. Dopey.
Are you calling on those Second Amendment people, Biden?
I know, yeah. There's got to be a Second Amendment remedy to Donald Trump.
What?
I'm being sarcastic. I'm a comic.
Yeah, what do you make of this? You know, say making a statement, walking it back, making a statement, walk. Oh, I didn't mean. You know, I wasn't making fun of that reporter. I wasn't imitating that reporter. I wasn't.
That one's. There's physical evidence. I mean, mocking a disabled guy, and I don't think we've ever had an oaf for a president. We've had liars, we've had thieves, we've had cheats, but never an oaf.
That's where we draw the line.
Yeah.
The line is at oaf, by
damn
the way.
Straight.
Not liar or cheat.
No. <They're> all... The only time I trust a politician is when he calls the other guy a liar. That's the only time he's telling the truth.
I have a question here from the audience. It says, these days, why would anyone admit to being a Republican? Perhaps admitted by a Republican.
People. We're in the 415 area code. This is not the real world, all right? San Francisco is a 49-square-mile circus in search of a tent. Melissa and I were speaking of this earlier about she's from Georgia and I'm from Wisconsin. And I go back home, and I'm a commie pinko yellow rat bastard. But in San Francisco, I'm a Nazi. You know? What happens when you go back to Marietta?
I don't.
Problem solved.
So not sure about that. This question says, if Trump is elected president, are we headed for an illiberal democracy or an autocracy? So are we headed for catastrophe or like serious catastrophe? Like, I guess it's kind of what this question is.
You know, both Hillary and Donald and the Hillary, they both are fond of saying if the other person is elected that it'll be a disaster, you know, but hey, come on, man. I mean, you know, we're pretty resilient. We made it through Reagan and Clinton and Carter and Nixon and Jackson and Harding and Coolidge and Vixen.
Do you recall?
So I think we'll be okay. I think although the joke. At Cleveland, the convention, because I was with Free Speech TV, and Free Speech TV is a little to the left of Fidel. So, but they're great people. I mean, Amy Goodman is their moderate. Okay, yeah. So,
I love that this audience is like, yeah, we know.
I know. This audience got that joke, which nobody else would ever get that joke. But they're really good. And everybody, the joke amongst the journalists was, let's say Trump wins. What are you doing, North or South? And everybody knew what everybody was talking about. And my answer was Vancouver to learn Spanish.
Yeah, I think Willie Brown once said, you know, if he wins, there's going to be a wall. And Canada's going to build it to keep us out. On a related note, if Trump were to be elected, how soon thereafter would he be impeached? And who would he sue?
Well, the amazing thing is, you know, you asked about Republican, but people really believe, you know, because my dad, I'm a third generation factory rat. My dad worked at Al's Chalmers. My grandpa worked at Al's. I worked there for a summer. So, I mean, we were all, and back then my dad could, you know, earn a living own a house, own a second house in upper Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, and have a boat all on one salary. You can't do that anymore. And that's why people, you know, can kind of cleave onto what Trump is saying. And another reason is it's easy to believe what Trump says because he has two positions on every issue. So, I believe it. Well, yeah, he's pro-abortion, he's anti-abortion, he's going to show his tax records, he's not going to show his tax records, he's a close personal friend of Putin, he doesn't know who the guy is. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy to see why people believe him.
So today we learned that Manafort is going to be sharing the leadership of the Trump campaign with some folks.
From Breitbart.
One from Breitbart, another female pollster just from the Republican Party. This is a question. I will read it to you. Since Manafort is out and an even eviler guy is coming in.
That's an apt description.
What do you know about him? Sort of what do you think is going to happen with the campaign?
I think Trump said it the other day. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Yeah, that was him being nice. And he actually said, Trump said that he thought that his convention speech was optimistic. He said that. And I think, yeah, that's the problem. You actually believe that was I'd hate to see you on one of your dark days. He better be taking his meds.
This question says, last week Trevor Noah said the key to understanding Trump is to understand that he is a stand-up comic. Are you offended by this? By being lumped in with Donald Trump? What's your comment on Trump as a stand-up comic?
Well, it's...
Or maybe performance artists.
Yeah, I would go... I think, you know, there is... anybody see the producers? You know, the Melbourne... There's the producer's theory in that, you know, he is trying to do the most outrageous campaign. You know, he's got a script about a Nazi, and he refuses to... And he's got 50% to Mrs. Cathcart and 50%, and he's just taking in the money. Because, you know, he's spending money at his own properties, at like Mar-a-Lago, he spent $500,000, and he spent $500,000 at Trump Tower. He's paying himself to sleep in his own bed. This guy isn't as dumb as his hair looks. No, I mean, he's not self-funding. He lent his campaign money, and then he expects to be paid back. That's why he's soliciting donations to pay himself for the money he lent his campaign to buy stuff from himself. Yeah. This is straight out of the catalog at Trump University, man. This is... It's double dipping 101.
If you look at his campaign filings, actually, you'll see that there are several $1,000 paid to Trump Ice. Apparently, he has a company that sells ice, the best ice, obviously. But it has furnished ice to various events and things, and then he has paid him for that with his campaign. So
that's for people who lost the recipe.
So this question says, note, I think both candidates are awful. But you both seem to be pro-Hillary. Please name two things she's accomplished without horrific side effects.
Seriously, dude. Well, I agree both candidates will make you sick. One will give you intestinal cramps and the other Ebola. So you pick.
Now, you've said, like, sort of from a comedian standpoint, Donald Trump is difficult to parody. Who would be your dream candidate? Like, which of the other candidates you wish had won that you could make more fun of?
I'll tell you the hardest. Romney was tough. Romney was tough because, there was just the rich guy and the Mormon family, and you don't want to pick on a guy's religion. Jimmy Carter was really hard because you felt bad making fun of him. You know, it was like kicking a puppy. It was...
Still is.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Reagan was great. George W. was the best because he was such an arrogant little. So you didn't feel bad, you know. You felt like you were doing a public service. And he was ripping Reed. I always carry these 3x5. And at the end of Bush's second reign of error, I had both sides full of verbatim quotes. And I would just, one was, I think we could all agree the past is over. You know?
True. True. Well, you said your job ends on November 8th. What if Trump is elected? Then,
well, you remember,
will you be thrilled?
Remember the year 2000, you know, where it went on and on.
Oh,
and
that's
Gore.
True.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
True.
So maybe January 21st. No, but it's not, there's always something. The hard part is not writing it. It's getting rid of the old material. That's the hard, you know, pushing out of the, for instance, my William Howard Taft material. Taft was
legendary.
Great.
Legendary.
Just talking about Taft. Shut your mouth.
This person writes, I miss the time when Republicans and Democrats had an underpinning of civility and respect. Do you?
No. No, I'm a comedian. It's easier. It's harder to take out Democrats because they see the shades of gray, whereas Republicans, it's all black and white. You know, and so it's easier to mock and scoff and taunt. So I actually do better when Republicans. The best part of my career was 1980 through 1992 when you had Reagan.
Are you voting for Trump for that reason?
No, I couldn't do that.
Okay.
No. And it doesn't matter. In California.
That's true.
Are you kidding? That's why it was so exciting to have the primary actually last. Thank you, Bernie, you know, because we got to see ads. We never get to see ads in California. Maybe once in a while they'll throw an ad into a national program, you know, like the Emmys or something. But we got to see local ads with Bernie came to Cloverdale, for crumbs. Yeah, it was very exciting, you know.
What did you think? So California Bernie supporters were some of the most vocal folks at the Democratic convention. What did you make of all that?
That was funny, wasn't it?
It was. It was one of these, like, these are my people. I was literally standing sort of, and like trying to do a newscast, and they were right here, and every mention of Hillary,
boo.
Yeah. Crazy boos. And that was on the first day. At the end of the convention, I have to tell you, there's this. I went back through to pick up some like souvenirs and stuff. So I grabbed some Hillary signs and stuff for people, and one of the signs that I picked up was from the Bernie supporters, and somebody had written, just handwritten on a big piece of whiteboard, "Are there any signs that I am missing?" And that was in the Bernie section. And I was
signs?
Like, this is so many levels. I don't know what to do. This is so strange. But to look at, you know, sort of who the sort of most vocal folks were, and for it to be Californians.
The California Bernie people. Mm-hmm. That's where they actually put, according, and I don't know if this is true, but they put the little sound muter up there mm-hmm. to stop the boos from reaching the rest of the arena from the California people. So they altered the architecture, you know. And the Bernie people, it was like a contest to see who could be the Berniest, you know. And Bernie didn't even make the cut. He got booed. They booed Bernie. They're strict. Debbie Wasserman Schultz got shouted down from addressing the breakfast meeting of her own state's delegation.
Why would she do that? Why would she even try to make that speech? That was the crazy thing. You knew she was going to get.
You didn't know.
There.
She thought she had a handle on her people.
That was not.
No.
Not the case. And
no,
that's where
that's
the Russian
good.
Hackers come
getting,
in.
Getting. No.
But yeah, so the California delegation had a breakfast the day after the Tuesday of the convention, and Bernie Sanders showed up to, you know, for obvious reasons, and then was booed down by a number of the folks in the California delegation again, who said, you know what, you want, you asked for a revolution and you got one. Right now, we're going to take a quick moment for our folks listening.
Where are we going?
On the radio.
Can I get more coffee?
Nope, you don't have time for that. This is the Commonwealth Club of California, a program where we are talking about talking with political comedian Will Durst, and we're talking about the election madness. I'm Melissa Kane, your moderator. You can listen to the Commonwealth Club programs on radio or podcast. You can watch our YouTube channel. Also, check us out on our website or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We also have another comment, another question from the audience that says, forget politics, what are we going to do about the Giants? Help us. Mr. Durst.
I couldn't even watch today. Bases loaded, nobody out, bottom of the ninth, and he hits into a double play. I couldn't even watch. I did, but I couldn't. Yeah, it was... Yeah, it's all about September, though. It's all about September. You watch. This team, at any time, could just, boom, win 10 in a row. Just very easily. Yeah, it's getting the mojo back, that's all. Sorry, I'm telling you more than you need to know.
Interesting. You sound like someone else. You sound like maybe Paul Manafort. Wait till September. We're going to be fine. It could totally turn around.
Well, that's the problem. You know, I mean... Because they had to have the conventions before the Olympics. A lot of times they have them after. But this time, for some reason, they decided beforehand. But then you have the Olympics in August. And then you start sending the kids off to school. And then it's Labor Day. And then baseball playoffs. And football starts. But you watch, right around Halloween, people are going to start paying attention.
Now, having been to both conventions, what did you see as the most important differences between them, as in terms of the vibe, you know, sort of
the cheesesteaks were better in Philly.
True. Did you get out to Philly because the compound was so far removed? I never got out.
Did you take the subway?
I never got out of the green zone.
Did you take the subway?
No.
You didn't go into downtown?
No. I mean, because you're sort of stuck there all day listening to the people scheduled to speak at 2 p.m. The state senator from Illinois who, you know, or whatever, those folks.
Yeah.
So you're sort of stuck there listening to stuff. So, no, we were stuck in there, and they were, it was all like hamburgers and bratwurst and, you know, again, vegetarian. But when I got to the Democratic convention, you walk in, and like at the very first, the main gate, you remember this main gate, you walk in, and there's this big sign, this big vertical sign that says gluten-free zone. In case you didn't know which convention you were at. It's like, oh, yeah. It's the Democratic one. I'm going to be fine. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and you know those things that the kids put in their ears, the little thing, and it gets bigger and bigger, and they get bigger and bigger. You didn't see a lot of those at the Republican convention. There were more at the Democrat. A lot more stiletto heels, bigger hair at the Republican convention, more gray ponytails at the Democratic convention. Mm-hmm. It was. You felt like it was my people, you know.
And it was interesting at the Republican convention. The California delegation was actually sort of front row. Now that's not usually something you see because it's California. You ain't getting those electoral votes. But because a state like Texas went for Ted Cruz, and California went so overwhelmingly for Trump, they ended up with awesome seats right up front. I was talking to some of the delegates, and they were saying, you know, usually we're met with kind of pity or irrelevance. You know, we're kind of not treated that great at these conventions, but this time they were really the bells of the ball. And at the end, when they cast their votes, it was a big cheer. Right?
You wouldn't think that the national parties would be that petty to reward a state or to punish a state, but they are, you know, according to the candidate.
Yeah. And if you looked at the seating chart, you could see who was the Trump supporters were right up front, and any state that did not vote for Trump was banished sort of to the back. And that was kind of important because some of these motions people were trying to make to open up the voting and things like that, you had to, or were verbal. And so they're just like literally screaming from the back of the room. Meanwhile, like New York and California are chanting USA to kind of drown the whole thing out. So the geography of the setup is actually important. But Clinton did it too. The Democratic convention.
Same thing.
There's a reason why California and its loud Bernie delegates were in like the back of the room, like, and Maine and some of the other states that voted for Bernie were way
Oregon,
back in the back.
Yeah.
They were way in the nosebleed seats. Okay, I digress. So what is your favorite moniker for Trump supporters? Trumpeters? Trumpians?
Trumpazoids. The Z always works.
Alrighty.
It's funny because, you know, he's hooked into the Tea Party thing. And the Tea Party was, you know, so, and I think it was racially motivated in 2010, you know, against, and not racist, but racial. You know, we're taking our country back from the black guy. You know, that was, and the same thing. We're going to make America great again after the black guy. You know, and I America is pretty good. I don't understand why they've created this giant crisis. You know, America's a disaster. Well, no, it's not. No, what are you talking about? You know, so that's yeah.
So we've got a note here to ask you to weigh in on Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, who's polling relatively well, 8 to 10%.
Yeah, he was at 11, and he only needs 4 more percentage points to get to 15 to qualify for the debates. But a lot of people think that the ticket should be switched. It should be William Weld on top and Gary Johnson. Because Gary Johnson, you know, he's kind of a firebrand. He's kind of a wildcatter. What's he doing now? He sells pot for a living. He sells medical marijuana. And he actually made a vow that if elected president, he will stop smoking pot. So we got that going for us. Then there's Dr. Jill Stein, and then there's Evan McKinnon, the CIA guy who's running just to mess with Trump in Utah. Wow, this is such a weird election. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Well, yeah, and remember, if he's able to win Electoral College votes and force a tie, it goes to the House of Representatives.
It's not going to be a tie. McKinnon's going to take some votes out of Colorado and some out of Utah. He'll make it a little more difficult for Trump to win.
But. He's suing now to get on the ballot in California.
Really?
He missed the deadline, and then he's suing. Kind of like when you do badly on a test, and then your parent calls the teacher. It's like, that was really unfair. She worked so hard. But he's in the process of suing to be on our ballot as well. Yeah.
Who's calling on his behalf? What dad? Is it the Mormon church is calling?
In California?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, in California, it's just the robust libertarian legal fund. I mean, they've sued to be on ballot in a number of states.
And everybody knows what a libertarian is. That's a Democrat with a gun or a Republican that smokes pot. Hence, Gary Johnson.
This person writes, so in the Trump acceptance speech, he supported LGBTQ rights.
Yeah, but he couldn't pronounce it. Did you see him read it off the tele? LGBTQ? And Q stands for questioning. Yeah. So I don't think he knew that. And so he was a little confused if that was real. Because he knows another word that starts with Q, and he didn't think that should be part of it. So you can see all that wash through his brain as he's reading the teleprompter going.
Were you just being sarcastic or... or just putting it out there?
Yeah, his whole campaign is a joke. I can understand that.
One congressman from California, a congresswoman from California, Karen Bass, has filed a petition, an online petition, demanding that Donald Trump be mentally examined, basically, by a professional. And it's gotten, as you might imagine, a number of signatures, both in America and from abroad. What are your thoughts? What do you think someone might find if they did an actual, like, serious evaluation? And do you think his supporters would care?
Yeah, he's kind of got, you know, a hard floor of people. I mean, 63% of the Trump supporters still think that Obama is Muslim. And that doesn't include a healthy percentage that think he's Muslim. Which is a loosely woven cotton fabric.
Prove he's not. Prove he's not.
So yeah, his people are just with him. You know, they don't care. They don't. Yeah, and I don't know if he can get above that, especially with the these new guys who are gonna. We're not gonna make him as likable. You know, just make him fierce. He's gonna be battle tested. Yeah, it's gonna be ugly.
So yeah, we're looking at sort of the third revolution inside his campaign. It looks like the third reset here. How hopeful are you that's going to work?
No, he's toast. But the problem with Trump, and I heard this is not original. I heard somebody on one of the shows. I don't know if it was Chris Matthews or whatever, but a lady journalist called Trump a monkey with a gun. Sure, you're in a fight with a monkey, and you're a human, so you should win. But he's got a gun, and he's a monkey. So you don't know what he's going to do with the gun. And I think that's what Trump is. He's a monkey with a gun.
Now, is Hillary Clinton just incredibly lucky to be running against a monkey with a gun? Could she beat a non-monkey with a gun?
I don't know. I mean, she's as Obama called her. You know, he called her the most qualified aspirant ever, and it was funny because you had that great lineup. You know, you had Michelle Obama, who gave this wonderful speech, and I can't wait for Melania's spin on it. And then you had Bill, and remember what he did in 2012 for Barack, and he just kind of turned everything around for Barack. And Barack actually called him the Secretary of Splainin' Stuff. Remember, that was the arithmetic speech. And so Michelle did for Hillary what Barack did for, what Bill did for Barack. And then Barack, you know, what great speech. And then poor Hillary had to follow all these people. You know, which is like, I don't know, it's like following the Rolling Stones, you know, and they turned off your mic. And then Joe Biden, who, you know, used the word malarkey, and that is always endearing. But I thought she gave a great speech, although the white suit was a little much, you know. Yeah, it looked like she was a bride walking out to marry America, you know. But I thought, you know, she was challenged with having to give the best speech of her life, and the good news is she did, and the bad news is that was it.
There was so much work at the convention to sort of humanize her. There were lots of videos and speeches. I mean, Bill Clinton's whole speech was, you know, I met a girl in 1971. And so...
And then I met Hillary.
Boom.
That's called wheelhouse.
It's my job. Did it work? Did you come away from the convention feeling like she's less of a cyborg, as you wrote?
Making Hillary cuddly is a tough job, you know. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like gluing goose down to the side of a barracuda. Because... I think she's smart and she's capable, but we don't see. And see, that's normally the pathway: is Republicans fall in line and Democrats fall in love. But this time it was reversed. The Republicans fell in love with it, and Bernie, they fell in. The problem I had with Bernie was he has never had a negative ad run against him ever. Not once in Vermont, in any of his races, not once. And And Hillary didn't dare throw out a negative ad, you know, because his supporters are like little people covered in fairy dust and you can't touch them. Otherwise, you know, the oil from your fingers, well, they'll never be able to fly again. But remember what they did to John Kerry. John Kerry, and you may not remember, he's a secretary somewhere. I don't know what he's doing. But Kerry, legitimate Vietnam veteran, war hero, Bronze Star, Silver Star, 3 Purple Hearts, and they were able to make him out because they found some guys who didn't like the fact that he turned against the war, and they got him out. And George W. Bush, who 60 Minutes had a report, and the provenance was questioned, but never the report itself, that he might have left his post in the Alabama National Guard without authorization. So you have a borderline deserter accusing a war hero of being a traitor, and America bought it. And now you're dealing with Bernie, who honeymooned in the Soviet Union?
Well, it wasn't a honeymoon.
Well, what was it?
It was the first trip we took after we were married.
That's what a honeymoon is! So I think he might have been vulnerable. That's all.
Well, that goes to the issue of the whole thing that people were chanting and sort of crying about at the convention was that they believed that only Bernie could beat Donald Trump because there were these polls showing that he did. But to, you know, a Hillary supporter would just say, well, you never had a negative ad run against you.
Ever.
That's why you look good next to Trump. Do you think that Sanders could have beat Donald Trump?
No. No, for that very reason that I say. Although, and the kids always say they're going to come out and vote, and then they never do. Did you ever notice that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, we're going to vote. Oh, we're going to vote. Rock the vote, you know. Yes, mock the vote. yeah, hock the vote. Yeah, but no, so it would have been tough. Although Obama was able to get this new kind of constituency, and I think he hates Trump. He hates him. The fact, and Obama, so smart, and that's the problem, is that he is so smart, and he knows he's so smart, and he assumes he's the smartest guy in any room, and a lot of times he is, you know. And then he's going to be followed by a monkey with a gun? He'll do anything he can for Hillary, and, you know, they don't, you know.
Oh, yeah, there is this theory that because of the President Obama's comments at the White House Correspondents' Dinner against Donald Trump, that Donald Trump sort of went home and began thinking, you know, maybe I should like that.
Remember that shot of him in that audience?
Yeah. That's why he's running for president, to get back at President Obama.
Yeah.
Do you think that?
I think he's petty and, you know, surface, and he's all talk. There's no substance there. You know, well, what do you think of foreign policy? Well, I know more than the generals. You know, he always, you know, he's always number one in everything, including humility. You know. I watch the Sunday shows. Well, dude, I watch the Sunday shows. I shouldn't be president.
This question, how would you describe the crowd at a Trump rally to someone who doesn't know anything about them?
Skinheads with hair. You are the best. Just right on a tee.
We're playing t-ball here. Now, this one I'm not familiar with. So it says that the creator of Dilbert, Scott Adams, has been supporting Donald Trump, apparently.
Really?
Apparently.
Really?
And the question is, has Scott Adams lost
sarcastically, or
no? It seems like legit. Would he be the only comic supporting Trump?
No, there are a couple of Scott Bio.
Scott
a member
is not
from the
funny.
Audience. Yeah, kind of sad that was the number one celebrity he could get. Scott Bio, Chachi loves Donnie. But I think there's a couple of other there's some conservative comedians. Dennis Miller is a conservative comedian, and he's still funny, you know, and he finds the hypocrisy. And so I think that's, yeah, you know, I mean, there's, most of us are liberal. There's
even like P.J. O'Rourke has come out and said he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's because he's educated.
Let's see. Republican Congressman John Katko said that having to share the ballot with Trump is, quote, why God made scotch. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. The best lines of the campaign, actually, a guy I had no respect for until the primary process, and that was South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. And
hilarious,
candid, and you know, there was no artifice. He had the best two lines, trying to burnish his bipartisan bona fides. He talked about his role model, Ronald Reagan, who would fight tooth and nail with Tip O'Neill during the day, but then at night they go out drinking at the Palms in Washington, D.C. And so he actually said this during a debate, that would be his first order of business after being elected president. He would start drinking more. And not a single other debater on the dais laughed. They all went, yeah, dude, that was funny. He also said when it came down to Trump and Cruz, Lindsey said that it was like a choice between drinking poison and shooting yourself in the head. But Bobby Jindal had a great line. Piyush Bobby Jindal said that, of course, Trump's never read the Bible. He's not in the Bible. Those are the three best lines, yeah.
Actually, today there was a Republican pundit on CNN who called the Trump campaign a turd tornado. So, there you go.
Well, I was going to ask if we could say turd on the radio. I guess that...
Apparently, you can say it on CNN, right?
Yeah, and Ted Cruz, no sense of humor. And it's funny because Ted Cruz, you know, Alan Dershowitz said he was the smartest student he ever had at Harvard Law.
Wow.
Yeah, but Ted, quite mad.
There may be some Harvard Law graduates. Yeah. None too pleased about that.
Yeah, including a couple of Supreme Court judges. But I doubt if Ted Cruz could actually win a majority of the voices in his own head. And you know, John Boehner said that Cruz was Lucifer in the flesh. And then Peter King, congressman from New York, said that was an unfair comparison to Lucifer. And those are the Republicans.
on the tails of that question, in terms of if you're a down ticket candidate, what do you do in this moment? I mean, you distance yourself from Trump, you lose his voters, you sort of hang with Trump, you're sort of hanging with Trump. What do you do?
Together or we hang individually? Yeah, this is a conundrum, and it's the same one that faces every congressman. You know, during the first midterm after a new president, in 2010, it was the same thing with Obama. You know, do you hang with Obama? So they're being hoisting their own petard. And also, you know, the fact that redistricting, so they got their districts that are so Republican that they don't have to worry from the left, but now they have to worry from the right. So it's getting more and more, and that's why they're angrier and angrier, and nothing gets done. And then Kellyanne Conway, who's the new campaign manager of Trump, her big thing during the Republican and Democratic conventions, because she was a contributor to MSNBC, and her big thing was, well, you don't understand that America, if you look at the wrong track, 73% of America thinks that we're on a wrong track, but Obama has an approval rating of 54%. So a lot of those people are blaming the Republican Congress, and you don't mention that fact. And yeah. And, oh, Donald Trump he's destroyed the Republican Party. No, he didn't destroy. He lifted the rock they were hiding under. you don't play this show in Wisconsin, do you? I can't go home.
Well, we have a bunch of ballot measures as well. We've got the death penalty, medical marijuana, billions in bonds and things that people are going to be facing this year. What effect do you think this presidential election and maybe people staying home or people being more enthusiastic to show up is going to do? I mean, we've got very serious issues that, after the election, it's going to be like, holy crap, what just happened?
What do you think is going to happen? What about pot? We'll legalize pot?
It's one of the. I think in theory people want to, but it's a 55-page proposal. It's really detailed. There's a lot of stuff, places where there can be messy things. And when we shot it down in 2010, it was similarly unworkable. And that was the thing. It wasn't that people didn't want to legalize pot. It was that the proposal was kind of a mess that people didn't want to deal with. So, to your point earlier about the Giants. September is when people will start paying attention. and so it's just a matter of, are people going to be turned off similarly to the second, 50, page 50, page 2 to 54, or are they going to,
In San Francisco, there's 24 propositions in San Francisco, just for the city. So including a 3/4% sales tax, which everybody, the city seems to, Ed Lee seems to think that it's going to pass in flying colors because its future revenue is included in the budget. That's how he balanced the budget. So this is just me saying, maybe we should tell Mr. Lee should go back to the drawing board.
What's our $9 billion budget right now? I mean, it's bigger than countries,
most countries.
I think it's a hard sell to some degree about, that we need more money here in San Francisco. When you look at Santa Clara, for example, whose budget is, not even $1 billion, adorable. Santa Clara, with your little less than $1 billion budget. When you look at sort of comparisons regionally, we've got a really lot of money already coming in.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah, you would think we would have, the economy doing well here, that more money would be coming in. I don't know where it's going. And why are all the politicians making us decide? Isn't that why we elect them? I don't know. Have you seen these? I haven't gotten my ballot yet, but 24 city propositions, and I think there's, 14 state?
17.
17 state?
So far.
That thing's... I need a tutor. I'm going to have to hire a ballot tutor.
Yeah, we're in this vortex because, the signatures required to put them on the ballot are based on the previous executive election. And so in San Francisco, Ed Lee's reelection turnout was super low, right? Because who cares? Ed Lee's reelecting, nobody's running against him. And then we have Jerry Brown's reelection on the state level. So you end up having just incredibly low numbers of signatures required to get things onto the ballot. So anybody who's got an idea about literally legalizing the ownership of ferrets, which is something that we will all have to be dealing with. This is your moment.
to get you mean that on I the can't ballot. Own a ferret in California?
No.
Damn it.
November 8th, you will.
And that's all I do is encourage, at the end of my little show, I encourage people to vote. I don't care who you vote for. Write yourself in. And it's November 8th. It's the first Tuesday after the first Monday, which only means it can't be November 1st. And I don't know why, because it's too close to Halloween. You don't want to scare people 2 days in a row. But just vote. I mean, because democracy is a participatory sport. You're not supposed to watch it from the sidelines. Go out and exercise your electoral muscle. And also, if you don't vote, you can't bitch. But then again, I'll pick up the slack.
And on that note, many thanks to political comedian Will Durst. I'm Melissa Kane, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know, is adjourned.
Nice job.